How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We are here every day, Monday through Friday, noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern. Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, the American Forces Network, Cable Radio Network, iHeartRadio, iTunes, TuneIn Radio. The list goes on and on. The most listened to daily pro wrestling and mixed martial arts radio show in the world. I'm flying solo today. Mike Sempervivi is still down. Josh Nason unable to make it today, but fear not. We have a lot of stuff coming up today. I am going to take your phone calls and text messages, I think. We'll see, because we only have one segment in which to do so, because in the second segment of the show, Dave Meltzer is going to be joining us here today. We'll be talking all of the biggest stories from the newest edition of the Wrestling Observer newsletter. It's coming up at about 20 minutes past the top of the hour. And then in the final segment of the show today, we are going to be joined by the last real man, Silas Young. He's going to be on the show today. He's going to be talking about Ring of Honor, as well as the boys, Dalton Castle, his career, whatever else is going on. Silas Young is going to be our guest in the final segment of the show today. In the meantime, we've got a lot of news. I want to know your thoughts on Lucha Underground and NXT last night, if you saw either show. I'll be reviewing them tonight on the Brian and Vinny Show, coming up later for subscribers, WrestlingObserver.com. We got some SmackDown news, when you're going to be seeing the next AJ Styles versus Chris Jericho match, TNA ratings, which may have stabilized on Pop TV, which is not good in the sense that if they stabilize here, they're well below that 1.5 million that the president of Pop was talking about. So we can discuss that. We got a lot of UFC news as well. There was an article about CM Punk that came out today. I don't know if you saw it, but he was, you'll be shocked, very grumpy. Whatever's on your mind, we'll talk about here today. Give us a call, drop us a text message, and we'll kick it off after the break. Observer Live, Sports Byline USA Radio Network. Well, you learn something new every day. Some of you, I'm sure, are well aware, most of you actually, since we talked about it here on the show, that Tammy Sitch, a.k.a. Sunny, her sex tape is out. In fact, I was up on our website, and there are reviews. If you care, you can head up to the Wrestling Observer website forums and find the thread and get all of the reviews of Sunny Side Up, if you care. Now, what I did not know, I just got a press release moments ago. I don't know how I got on this mailing list. It's not how you think, by the way. For immediate release, wrestling diva Tammy Lynn Sunny Sitch's autobiography, A Star Shattered, to be released by Riverdale Books, or something like that. Riverdale Avenue Books, February 4th. You'll be able to grab it on RiverdaleAvenueBooks.com, Amazon.com, and on iTunes.com. Today, February 4th. Says that Tammy Sunny Sitch has written a tell-all autobiography titled A Star Shattered, The Rise and Fall, and Rise. So I guess she's on the upswing right now of wrestling diva Tammy Sunny Sitch. It says here that, I don't hold anything back, says Sunny. I spilled my guts out in this book. I think it's raunchy, obscene, racy, and heartfelt. Readers will go with me in the ring and on the road through my romantic relationships, my domestic abuse, my battling cancer, my incarceration, getting sober, and much more. I don't regret one moment of my life. I have been battered and should be bitter, but instead I learn from my experiences and move on. I'm excited about what the future holds for me. So if you want to read this, I guess it is up at RiverdaleAvBooks.com. as well as Amazon and iTunes. I did not even know that she had an autobiography, but apparently it's out, so you can check that out. Also want to read this, because otherwise I'm going to get yelled at repeatedly. For anyone listening that is going to or thinking of going to WrestleMania in Dallas, there are still a few spots open for the Friday night dinner prior to NXT and Ring of Honor at Texas de Brasil, and also for the bus to Mania on WrestleMania Sunday. Anybody interested can contact Ed Laredo at f4wfan@hotmail.com for details. They're also in the daily update or the thread on the board in the Empire Get-Togethers section. So if you want to go to WrestleMania, make sure you contact Ed, f4wfan@hotmail.com. A couple of news notes, and we'll do some phone calls, text messages, and as noted, Dave is going to be on the show, Dave Meltzer, in the next segment. We had the impact numbers for the Tuesday show on Pop TV. Minor decline, down to 295,000 viewers for the first run and 112,000 for the second run. That's down from 339 in the first run last week and 103, so it's actually up a little bit for the midnight showing. But if you combine them, they are very, very close, but still much, much lower, still in the 400,000 range than whatever was claimed by the president of Pop TV as what their goal was or what they expected. Something like 1.5 million viewers, which on Pop TV is going to be very difficult. Pop has got some more clearances, but also lost some, which is interesting. I'm not going to talk about this on the show here. I'll talk about it on the Brian and Vinny show tonight because there may be profanity involved. But my cable company, Frontier, I would say it's the worst, except I've also had Comcast, which also sucked. They're all terrible. I've been having a big rigmarole regarding El Rey for Lucha Underground. And as I'm trying to solve this problem, which apparently is impossible to solve, I went into the messages area of my television, and I'm alerted that we may not get Sinclair anymore after this weekend. I don't know if it's a carriage, a rights deal issue or whatever, but we may be losing Sinclair. So I think I have Comet, so it won't affect the Ring of Honor reviews that we do on the weekends. But man, one thing after another. I can't cut the cord because I've got a lot of stuff to watch, but dealing with cable companies, it's very easy to see why. I mean, despite the cost aside, just dealing with the cable company trying to get channels and they make it impossible. I mean, I understand why everybody wants to cut the cord. I would love to cut the cord. I never watch television. I only watch what I have to watch for this show. It would be great to be able to cut the cord, but don't think that's happening anytime soon. But those are your TNA Impact numbers there. SmackDown is tonight. Make sure you watch that show to see the great Mauro Ranallo calling all of the action. And while I will not give away spoilers, I will say that the streak is over and the main event does have a finish. I was wondering how long they would go, having DQs and no contests and whatever. But we actually got a finish in the main event of the show this week. And while I will not reveal the outcome of Miz versus AJ, for those of you who the outcome is in doubt, I will say that they do announce that next week on SmackDown, it is going to be AJ Styles versus Chris Jericho Part 2. Now, this means a couple of things. First off, that SmackDown is in Portland, and I'm not going. I'm going to be going to Raw on Monday, but I can't make the trip down to Portland for SmackDown. But if you're in the area and you want to see that match, it's going to be on the SmackDown tapings. So that's number one. And number two, because they did the first match on Raw and the second match on SmackDown, my guess would be that the third match is going to take place on the Fastlane show. And if the third match takes place on Fastlane, that likely means we're not going to see Chris Jericho versus AJ Styles at WrestleMania. So I will be intrigued to see where they're going. We had a caller yesterday asking about Jericho, who he's going to wrestle at Mania. And I know that Jericho wants to work guys like Hideo Itami, who he wanted to work but got hurt and may not be back anytime soon. He's had complications with his shoulder surgery. And guys like Finn Balor and AJ Styles, obviously. So hopefully we get a real fun match with Jericho and somebody of that ilk at WrestleMania. I don't know who it's going to be, but looking right now like it is not going to be AJ Styles. Let's go to the studio line. You're on the air. What's up?
Brian, it's Curtis from Miami. How are you doing today?
What's up, Curtis?
So Dave reported in the recent Observer that Kevin Owens was instrumental in shifting how AJ was going to be eliminated in the Royal Rumble, and it got me thinking about something. You know, a lot of folks look back at, like, the clique and the backstage politics of the 90s with a lot of derision, However, one of the really good positives I think that came out of that is you had a lot of workers protecting their self-interest. And I think you talked about this on the show before. The today's workers, right, the wrestlers aren't standing up and saying, no, this is stupid, I'm not going to do it. And it got me thinking, we've seen that Triple H is close with Kevin Owens and Finn Balor. They're always throwing up the Wolfpack signs. Have you or Dave really ever heard about, guys kind of protecting their interests or coming together, specifically the Kevin Owens, the Finn Balors? We know these guys have been friends for a while. Could we see kind of a formation of guys who are like, this is stupid. This is what I think should happen, and I'm going to stand up to the boss and say it.
Well, first off, I want to thank you very much for the call. Here's the problem. Let's say that there's an idea, and Kevin Owens thinks it's stupid, and he goes to Triple H and he says, this is stupid. Well, guess what? Triple H is sort of the boss, but he's not the boss. And so the guy you really have to stand up to is Vince McMahon. Now, obviously, Hunter has some power, and Kevin Owens got something through at the Royal Rumble, and guys can do that, and guys have done that. But at the end of the day, you've got to go to Vince, and you've got to stand up for yourself. I have talked about the issues that guys in the 90s used to have, and, Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, Sid would walk out, Ultimate Warrior would walk out. I mean, there's a fine line. There's two extremes. There is the extreme where you have a group of guys who won't say anything because they're terrified. And then there is the other extreme where if a guy doesn't get what he wants, he leaves. And obviously it was easier to leave in the 90s because if you're really mad and you walked out, they didn't want you off television, especially WWF in the 96-97 period because they needed all these stars. And number two, you could go somewhere. You don't have that nowadays. So I think guys should step up, but you also can't have guys walking out. There is a fine line now that I think about it. Back in a moment with Dave Meltzer, Observer Live, Sports Byline USA Radio Network. Back here on the show, Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by Dave Meltzer, also of WrestlingObserver.com. The new issue of the Wrestling Observer newsletter is up right now for subscribers at WrestlingObserver.com. A lot of stuff in there. Dave, what's going on?
Yeah, tons of stuff. It's always busy.
Any news on Brett this morning?
Nothing new that we didn't talk about last night. The good news is that it appears that they caught his cancer early. So that's really about the only news that there's been since what he released himself on Monday.
You've got a big article in the issue this week about the Stomper. A long one. Tell everybody a little bit about Archie Goldie.
Yeah, he was a really interesting character. He was probably during the 60s and 70s in Stampede Wrestling, he was probably the most famous wrestler in that area. And then in places like in Tennessee, he was a huge, huge star. He was a main eventer everywhere he went. But those were the places where I think he had the most lasting memories. And so in the story, I kind of focused on, Memphis and Knoxville and, Southeastern Championship Wrestling, Jarrett's promotion with Gulas and Welch earlier, and Stampede Wrestling and his time in those places. But I covered his whole career, Japan, Australia, actually Australia pretty strongly as well. He had 30 years of being like a headline performer, which is a long, long run. And he was very unique, a very scary, very scary wrestler for his era. They kept him strong. You watch the booking and everything, especially in Tennessee, where he was the Mongolian Stomper. He was portrayed as a monster, and they booked him like a monster. And he had a great run in Memphis. One of the greatest runs that they've ever had, actually, in that city until he talked, and then it kind of fizzled out, which was a big lesson to be learned. There's actually a lot to learn from that one.
When you talk about fizzled out, he started talking, and it was immediately like, within the next 2 weeks, you could see the attendance just crash.
Well, it crashed back to normal levels. In the sense of it's not like something that just went to terrible levels. They were at normal levels, and then the Stomper was brought in. He was put over, and then when he started getting into the main events, the attendance they were doing about 5,000 a week. His first main event was about 7,600, and then he had this string of 10,000 plus, a lot of sellouts, which was 11,500 at the time at the Mid-South Coliseum. And he was doing gangbuster business the summer of 75, a run, one of the greatest runs they ever had. And then his manager, Bearcat Wright, who did all the talking for him, left because of a lawsuit. So the Stomper, who was a great talker, did an interview. But the problem was is that the Stomper in Calgary was Archie the Stomper Gouldy from Carbon, Alberta, and they knew who he was, and he was very successful. The Stomper in Tennessee was the Mongolian Stomper from, you know, Mongolia. And then when he talked, I mean, he talked perfect English, and it was like it just killed the gimmick. And, yeah, it went back to normal. It quickly went back to normal levels of attendance, 5,000, 6,000 a week, yeah.
It is interesting that, I mean, we can talk to Jim Cornette about this later on, but it's not like fans, a lot of fans, didn't know what wrestling was. It's not like everybody that went to the building thought that this was all real. But when you shattered the illusion, that was it.
I mean, Stomper came back and drew in those places later, and they, you know, brought him back and didn't let him talk. I mean, they learned their lesson. But did he ever draw like he did the first time? No, he didn't. I mean, never got back to that level. But yeah, like, you know, 10 years later, after this period, actually, you know, I shouldn't say 10, it's actually closer to 20 years later, Cornette brought him. This is in Knoxville. And one of the things Cornette did when he used him, which was the last big run of his career in Smoky Mountain Wrestling, is that guy did not talk. And, I mean, it was never even considered that he would talk. And, again, this is a guy, I mean, when if you talk about the Mongolian Stomper, you know, you want to go to YouTube and look up Archie the Stomper Gouldy and click in Archie Gouldy and Bad News Allen, and you will see some of the greatest interviews you ever saw. And then the whole point is that, like, we're going, like, it killed this guy was talking because it's like two different guys. Archie the Stomper, you know, was a great talker. The Mongolian Stomper, based on the gimmick of being a madman from Mongolia, he shouldn't be able to go out there and do a perfect interview. It doesn't fit the character. So it's kind of something about, you know, it's a lesson about the characterization, you know, in the sense that some guys do things that may be really good at doing them, but if it doesn't fit the character, it's not necessarily a positive.
It's also very interesting at the end of the deal here, you talk about how he went to work at the Knox County Jail, and he was a tough guy. And if things got out of hand, he'd take off the gun belt and beat some ass. And it is an interesting story that goes full circle from how he got into the business, which was he got taken down to the dungeon and Stu Hart beat his ass.
And that's and then at the end, you know, he learned from Stu Hart for, you know, in the dungeon with, by that, and by the end, I mean, then he knew what to do. And yeah, he was a tough physically impressive guy, especially, you know, when I just remember him in Georgia, and this is in the 80s, so he was mid-40s at this point, and he would be doing that twister that they used to advertise in the Joe Weider magazines with Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he would just stand there and do the twister over and over, and his upper body would just be ripped, you know, and Don Carson would do his promos, and he had those really cut legs because he would do the free squats for like an hour. He was like a very moody guy, and I guess his release was just doing calisthenics over and over and over again. You know, kind of like Mike Sharp was the same way, who recently passed away. Bob Backlund, obviously, when we talked to him. I don't know that Bob Backlund was a moody guy, but Bob Backlund was very into doing, you know, hours and hours of training. And, you know, that was just the Stomper's thing. I mean, let's face it, this guy, when he was in his 40s, he worked in a territory where most of the matches were within 200 miles, but, you know, the majority are actually 40 miles or less. And his rule was that if a town was 40 miles or less, he rode his bike. He didn't drive. So it's 40 miles there and 40 miles back. You know, and when he was a lot older and he was working at the Knox County Sheriff's Department at the jail, it was about 11 miles from his house to work, and he never drove to work. He always rode his bike both ways. I remember like that when I saw him in, mid-90s in a show. I saw him in a couple of shows, but I just remember, like, the whole thing of, like, his legs looked the way he was, and it was like, well, the guy is a bike fiend. So it was like, and actually, I kind of copied that myself, you know, to keep in shape. So I guess he influenced me.
Ever any stories about people on the way to the wrestling show and, hey, there's the Mongolian Stomper on his bicycle?
I never did hear anything about that. No. But I can tell you it's a totally unrelated story, which was awesome, which was about the Crusher. The Crusher used to, you know, when this is, and this would probably be 50s, early 60s probably. He lived in Milwaukee. And in his promos, he would talk about training, which would be running by the lake with a beer can, with a beer keg, carrying a beer keg. And in fact, he would do that because that fit his image. He would run and carry a beer keg with him.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Now, this is not in the Observer, but I did see this today, and I've got all these people on Twitter talking about it. Did you see, on a completely unrelated note, the second act of CM Punk story that came out?
It was a great story, wasn't it?
Yes, oh, my God, this guy.
That story.
For those of you that didn't read it, I'll retweet it here. But essentially, some guy goes to interview him, and he's sitting there looking exactly like Jay Briscoe. Big, bushy beard. He's all crabby. Doesn't look at the guy the whole time. And the guy tries to ask him some questions about, you know, what do you think you need to work on? And CM Punk gets so mad at this guy that at the end, he walks out and his handler tells this dude, CM Punk says he never wants to talk to you again. I was like, man, this guy hasn't even started really doing press for this fight.
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing is that, you know, CM Punk is a smart guy, obviously. And one of the things that his value to the company is the fact that he can get press, that a lot of people will talk about him and do press. And unless, you know, I mean, there probably are reporters that are actually like, if there are reporters that are actually like nasty or ask really dumb questions, it's one thing. But you know what? Even if they do, you know, most guys, you know, I mean, believe me, I have seen and been around certain fighters where they were asked questions and embarrassed me and I actually would walk away. You know, I mean, I remember with, I'll even bring an example. It was Luke Rockhold a couple of months ago. He was doing interviews, and there were some TV stations from foreign countries. And all the questions were about, Luke, you know, what kind of girls do you like? Do you like Mexican women? What do you think of this and that? And I'm just going, like, I just walked away. It's just like, the guy's a fighter. I mean, I guess that there's probably something there. But he was also very ill at ease answering those questions. You know, it wasn't, you know, he had a big championship fight with Chris Weidman coming up, and they're asking him, you know what I mean? And I know that, you know, he's a good-looking guy and all that, but with CM Punk, they're asking him questions about fighting, and it's like, you know, you got to be patient. And the whole thing of Punk is, again, he can get a lot of media and he can get a lot of attention, so he should. That's why he's able to make the money that he can as essentially a beginning fighter. So I'm not there. I don't know everything. I know that Punk can be moody. Although, you know, again, I've had limited interactions with Punk in my life. But everyone has been very, very pleasant, and he was anything but that with me. But again, you know, I mean, I know he can be moody. That's not a secret.
All right, the new issue of The Observer is available at WrestlingObserver.com. If you sign up, you not only get all the radio shows we talk about every day, but you get access to The Observer. We got two issues a week. There is a new issue. There is a back issue. There's hundreds of archived issues. And if you would like to grab a paper copy of it delivered to your door, P.O. Box 1228, Campbell, California, 95009. I think it's $12 for four issues. Is that right?
That's right.
All right. And Dave, I want to thank you so much for doing the show. We're going to be back in a little while with Silas Young. And then Dave and I are going to be up later on today with Jim Cornette talking the Mongolian Stomper. And yes, we will talk to him about Lucha Underground as well, because I've heard that Jim Cornette is not a fan. Find out what that's all about. Back in a moment with Silas Young of Ring of Honor, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by the last real man. Silas Young is here on the show here today. Silas, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, surprisingly. It hasn't been a crappy day like usual.
Man, you know, before you got into wrestling, for real, there were a lot of crappy days. Is that right?
There was. There was a lot of crappy days. There definitely was.
Tell us a little bit about... Go ahead.
I was going to say, I do try to be a little bit more appreciative of things nowadays.
What was life like before you got into wrestling? Is it true that you were a heroin addict?
Yeah, I basically was a guy who grew up in a rich to middle class white area, bunch of kids with nothing but time and money to waste. And before I got into wrestling, I sold drugs and was addicted to heroin for a couple of years, and that was about it.
You know,
lots of partying.
It's funny because there's a lot of guys that they grew up just fine. And then they got into wrestling. Not so much nowadays, but certainly, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago. Got into wrestling, and then they got into drugs. And I guess you went the opposite way. How did wrestling help change your life?
I mean, at the time when I was kind of cleaning up my act a little bit, I had a buddy who had became an indie wrestler, and he had told me he was having his first show, so I decided to go to that show. And while I was there, I was kind of watching him, thinking, well, you're way more athletic than your buddy Tom is. And that was kind of the day I decided I was gonna clean stuff up and do something with my life.
So how big a wrestling fan were you before you got into wrestling? I mean, was it a daily thing? You were always going home to watch wrestling. How big a fan were you?
I was a really big fan as a kid. And then I kind of maybe early teenage years kind of fell out of watching it, watched it a little bit here and there. I mean, I still had the buddy that I went to high school with that I had mentioned going to see his first match. He always watched it, so I would go over there at least a few times a year and watch pay-per-views with him. So I always kind of stuck with it. But then when, like, they did the whole NWO angle, you know, in the late 90s, that's when I kind of started watching it again. So at that time, I had started being a big fan again a few years prior to that.
Now, your real life growing up, having a lot of money and et cetera, seems very different from the character of Silas Young that we see on Ring of Honor television every week. Was there is it not?
Well, I mean, a little bit. I mean, I had a good upbringing. I mean, I had good parents and stuff like that. My dad was a little bit of a hard ass. I was the youngest of six boys. And by the time I came around, all my brothers, besides the oldest one, we were all kind of, you know, mess ups, you know, goofing around, getting into trouble, doing crap like that. So by the time I came around, he was tired of the crap and no nonsense. And I mean, my dad was a strong man. He had no problem, swearing at my friends or even cuffing them up alongside the head if they needed it. And there's a few of my older brother's friends who I heard as I got older that my dad had actually got into it with and beat up. So we did have a good upbringing, but my dad didn't take crap.
So Silas Young is your dad.
And Silas Young is my father to a T.
How about that? Now,
yes,
I gotta follow up on what you just said. So you had friends that told you later that your dad had gotten into it with them. They didn't tell you at the time?
Yeah. Say that again?
They didn't tell you at the time?
No. I'm sorry. I might have missaid that. My older brother's friends, my dad had gotten into it with.
I see.
And something like that. Like, I know, like, my oldest brother, one of his buddies, when they were like 16 or 17, I think they were drinking some beers with my dad, and the one started smarting off, and my dad grabbed him and threw him through a closet.
Now, at what point in your career did you decide this character? I'm going to create a character based on my father. Was this from the very beginning? Was it something that evolved over time?
Something that more evolved over time, actually. I kind of realized, you know, after a few years that there's a lot of guys out there who are just a first name and a last name that are really good wrestlers, and I'm not trying to take anything away from them, but I was trying to do something to separate myself because I feel like there's a lot of guys who are equally as athletic as me, equally as well-built, equally as well-spoken. But the thing that maybe separates them from me is the fact that people can go, all right, well, there's the last real man. He's a real ass, you know. He's going to guaranteed to give us a good time, guaranteed to show a little ass, guaranteed to entertain, opposed to just guys who, like I said, are a first name and a last name, and they're just really good wrestlers.
Now, what kind of relationship do you have, or did you have, with your dad? Is he still around? Oh, I lost him. Stand by, everybody. We will try to get him back. In the meantime, if you have questions for Silas Young, you can contact me at Brian Alvarez. Now I got to figure out how to get him back. I'm going to try and do this here on the air. Sounded like he was at a show. Ring of Honor, by the way, has a taping in Nashville this coming weekend, February 6th. So if you're in the area and you want to head out there to check out Silas Young, you can do that. I think this is him right here. Silas, is that you?
This is me. Sorry about that. The phone must have cut out.
Sorry about that. So the question, is your dad still around? What kind of relationship do you have? Does he know that you're basing this character on him?
Yeah, like I said, my parents are both still alive. My dad's like in his mid-70s now, so he's really mellowed out over the last 10 years or so. And he knows. I've told him about the whole basing a character thing off him. I mean, as a matter of fact, everybody in my family, my dad's name is Jim, and everybody refers to him as Big Jim. I think he kind of likes it a little bit. He gets a kick out of it. He's a good sport about it.
Does he ever give input? I mean, does he watch Ring of Honor television and go, man, Silas, you should have given those boys a worse beating than you did on that show?
You know what? I don't think they get it where they live. I live a couple hours away from where my family lives, so I don't know if they get it on TV or not. He's never said anything.
Now, the current storyline with the boys and Dalton Castle, this is like the perfect storyline for the Silas Young character.
Right.
Is this your favorite storyline you've been involved with? You've been doing this for a long time. You're up on 15 years or something like that right now, something close to that.
Yeah, it'll be like 14 years, I think, here in a month or so.
Yeah, is this your favorite storyline you've been involved in, or if you were to lead somebody to another storyline, what are some of the things that you've really enjoyed?
I really have enjoyed the storyline here with Dalton. He's the polar opposite of the last real man, so it makes it really fun. And he's a good dude. We seem to both be on the same page when trying to be creative together. So I really enjoyed it. I think it's probably some of the best stuff I've ever gotten to do, especially as the last real man.
So you won possession of the boys here. And this
right.
led to a television storyline where you did some videos. You're trying to get him to learn how to change a tire, for example, and I forget all the others, mow your lawn or whatever. And
right.
how much input, I mean, is this a deal where they give you a camera and they send you and the boys out and they just say, go to town and bring me back something good? I mean, did they have something they told you to do? How did that work?
We had when the whole idea of the thing came together, we were standing around talking, and we had mentioned how we needed to do some funny segments, some funny vignettes, teaching the boys to be men, and it was kind of some ideas of a few guys spitball and stuff. So I mean, it was pretty much, I mean, kind of left up to basically, I mean, left up to, a lot of it has been left up to me and Dalton, or me and the boys, and then other people that are that just happen to be there who spitball ideas and just kind of shoot some stuff and see what comes out best.
When you were doing these vignettes with the boys, I am not fully convinced that the boys actually know how to change a tire or any of the things you are trying to teach them to do. Did this ever break down into, okay, hold on, guys, seriously, have you ever changed a tire and let me show you how to do it?
Oh, I mean, don't get me wrong, those guys are nice kids and all, but they're pathetic. They're pathetic attempts at being men. There is no fakeness to the fact that they are clueless when it comes to stuff like that.
They seem very young. Are they under the age of 20?
I think they might be a little bit older. They might be old enough to drink a beer, but I think they'd piss their pants if they had a full one.
Man. Have you tried to take them under your wing in real life and just say, listen, guys, I mean, come on, we got to learn how to do some of this stuff. We got to learn how to be men for real here.
Yes, I've tried. Others have tried, but they seem more concerned with doing Pokemon drawings and posting them on Twitter.
Oh, man. Now, another guy that I got to talk about is your buddy, the Beer City. I don't know if I should call him your buddy, but the Beer City Bruiser.
Right.
Silas Young is a guy, he has no friends, it seems. But it seems to me that the Beer City Bruiser is not really a friend. He's just another fellow that you can tolerate. Would that be accurate?
That's a great way to put it. Beer City Bruiser is, one of those guys. He's kind of a guy's guy. Everybody likes him. He's a good dude. And he's not afraid to speak his mind or kick some ass. So he's like the one guy I could tolerate being a partner with for limited amounts of time.
What are some of the, I mean, obviously you've been in Ring of Honor for many years now. You were in and out, but now you've been there quite consistently. I mean, are there any particular guys that you love to have a storyline with, you'd love to work with, that somehow your paths have never crossed?
I mean, they do a pretty good job of, you know, making sure that guys aren't working the same guys over and over and over, which is good. You know, Roddy's a guy that I'd like to work with more. I think we might have worked once or twice. Adam Cole, I've gotten to work with one time, but I thought he's very good. It'd be fun to do some stuff with him. I mean, the great thing about working at Ring of Honor is you never have to go, oh, crap, I got to work with so-and-so. Everybody they use there is good. And I've said it on commentary before. You know, someone likes to say so-and-so is a good wrestler. Well, of course they're a good wrestler. They're in Ring of Honor. We're all good wrestlers. So really, honestly, it's a pleasure to be able to work with any of the guys there.
We got a couple of minutes here. I wanted to make sure to ask you about Ohio Valley Wrestling. What are your memories of working in Ohio Valley, hanging out and learning from guys like Rip Rogers? What kind of memories do you have?
You know what? I was never there really long. I never really actually got started in their developmental program. I went down and did a week-long tryout thing, worked a string of house shows. Everybody there was really cool. A couple weeks after doing the tryout thing, I got offered a job, filled out all the paperwork, did all the drug testing stuff, all that. I think I was waiting just to get a passport. And then I saw online that OVW closed, or they were not closing, but they were getting rid of the developmental partnership or whatever with WWE. And I got a call the next day and said that they would not be putting my contract through because at the time I was supposed to report to OVW. And, of course, my response was, well, I have no problem moving to Florida. And they said, well, the offer just isn't there right now.
Wow.
So I appreciated the week. It was really cool. But I never really even got a chance to do anything. So it was definitely a huge disappointment for me. Huge disappointment.
And now, very quickly, I mean, where did you work before going to Ohio Valley? I mean, was it just a bunch of indies for years? Or I don't really see, like, what you were doing prior to that.
Yeah, I mean, just trying to get booked on indies every weekend. I had done a real little bit for Ring of Honor at the time, but just a handful of things, nothing really of any importance or anything that really got noticed. You know, maybe like a couple dark matches. I think I might have done like one or two on the main show, but that was about it.
When we come back from the break, we'll get some plugs in for your social media, if the real man has any, of course. And we'll also be talking about the Ring of Honor show. We'll be back in just a moment. Observer Live, Sports Byline USA Radio Network. Back here for the final segment of the show. Brian Alvarez here, joined by the last real man, Silas Young. And I have to say that some people have Twitters that suck. Silas Young does not. At last real man, ROH. What type of person watches Grizzly Knows Best, you asked here? A great question. Let's get some plugs in. Any social media, any emails for bookings, anything like that? The floor is yours, Silas.
Yes, you can follow me on Twitter at LastRealManROH. Any interested parties for bookings can email me at SilasWrestle123@yahoo.com. And that's about it for social media.
You got a show this weekend in Nashville, Ring of Honor television taping on February 6th. You have any idea who you're working?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's going to be me and Bruiser against the boys.
Man.
I've been given an opportunity, and they didn't want to take that opportunity, so now they're going to be getting served up a little punishment this weekend in Nashville, which is pretty great because I believe that's their hometown or close to, so I'd be more than happy to beat those boys in front of their parents.
Oh, man, if I were in Nashville, I would go. I want to thank you so much for doing the show today, Silas. And, of course, we'll be back tomorrow with more, everybody. We're completely out of time. Thanks, everybody at Byline, Silas Young, all the callers and listeners. We'll talk to you again next time. Observer Live, Sports Byline USA, Radio Network.